Welcome to the ABCA's podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Brownlee. New podcast sponsor is Aware Sports. Are you looking to improve your use of video for player development, live streaming, instant replay, or opponent scouting? Most coaches answer yes. That's how Aware Sports began, to solve the video challenges in baseball and softball. Whether using their multi-angle fixed camera system or their mobile software, Aware empowers coaches to maximize every aspect of video all in one comprehensive solution. Their users range from MLB teams and reigning collegiate national champions to strong high school programs and literally everything in between. So the real question becomes, will you turn video into a powerful tool to elevate your program or stick with the status quo? You can find out more information at awaresports.com. That's awresports.com. Thanks for listening. This episode is sponsored by Netting Pros. Netting professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specializes in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, BP screens, and ball carts. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf, turf protectors, dugout benches, dugout cubbies, and more. Netting Professionals is an official partner of the ABCA and continues to provide quality products and services to many high school, college, and professional fields, facilities, and stadiums throughout the country. Netting Professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or info@nettingpros.com. Visit them online at www.nettingpros.com or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Make sure to let CEO Will Miner know that the ABCA sent you. Now on to the podcast. Next up on the ABCA podcast is Bethune-Cookman head coach Johnny Hernandez. Hernandez grew up in South Florida and played and coached at tradition-rich Hialeah High School. Hernandez went on to start the program at ASA College in Miami in 2014. Hernandez has spent time working for USA Baseball as a scouting task force member. Hernandez took over the BCU program in August 2018. BCU had a great year with wins over FIU, Florida Gulf Coast, Jacksonville, North Florida, and Stetson. BCU finished second during the regular season in the SWAC East and eventually lost in the SWAC championship game during the conference tournament. Hernandez was honored with the Black College Nines Coach of the Year Award this season. Let's welcome Johnny Hernandez to the podcast. How's the summer going?
All good. On that grind.
Yeah.
You know, just replacing some guys and just making some last minute, I guess, calls here to see if we can wrap everything up in the next 2 weeks before school starts.
Yeah. When do you guys get going?
Everyone's going to be here on August 9th. And then we'll do physicals and, you know, compliance meetings, team meeting, and then school starts on the 19th.
So, it seems like it's moved up earlier and earlier. My daughter is a sophomore at UNCG, and it just seems like post-COVID, the academic calendar has been moved up.
Yeah, for it seems the same way. You know, it seems like everything's bumped up. And even like for my kids, we have our daughter's going to be a senior in high school. And now we're originally from Miami. Yeah. So usually in Miami, we start a little bit later. And then now it's like second week of August, they start school and then they finish, you know, the last week of May. And when I was coaching high school, we were like in the regional playoffs and the guys were still in school. And like, it's, I don't get it, but whatever.
Well, and for you guys too, at least trying to catch your breath a little bit for you all, because you're right in the thick of it right now and you just don't have much time to try to catch your breath before you get back into it.
Yeah, no, we don't. But there's the upside to it, right? Like looking forward to the winter break and then just some of the recruiting shutdown periods that were put in place where it gives us a chance to really just catch, I guess, a little bit of a break. But, you know, as much as we want to believe it's a break, we're still working no matter what.
Yeah, for sure. But at least it's a forced shutdown. Because I wish we would have had that when I was coaching, because I'm in the same camp as everybody else. Like if you're able to go out, you want to go out and work, and it's nice to have those forced shutdowns.
No, absolutely. Yeah, it doesn't stop, man. And from my JUCO days, going 3-4 high school games, you know, just to build up the program there. And yeah. I get it. You know, sometimes you definitely do need to take a step back and just take a deep breath and then, you know, get it going.
Here with Johnny Hernandez, head coach at Bethune-Cookman since 2018, but started the program at ASA College in Miami, but was the head coach at Tradition Rich Hialeah High School for a long time. So, Johnny, thanks for jumping on with me.
Appreciate it, Ryan. Thank you for having me on.
This is a crazy time for you guys, so I do appreciate you carving out some time to jump on with me.
No, absolutely. Anytime, you know, I can kind of give back or talk about our program, and I think that it's great, and I appreciate everything you do and the ABCA does for all of its members.
Did you know you were going to get into coaching when you were playing?
I think I did. You know, going back to the high school days, being a lefty, that was, you know, 83, 85, knew that professional baseball wasn't going to be the avenue, you know, for me for a career. But I got to thank my high school coaches, you know, at the time, Coach Rich Bilski, Hector Torres, you know, Carlos Marti, you know, those guys instilled, you know, what I wanted to become. And I was a sponge, you know, asked a lot of questions. And that was something that kind of drew me to the game. And, you know, what better way than, you know, make a living than coaching baseball and impacting young men. So I knew early on this is something that I wanted to do.
Did they nudge you a little bit, say, hey, this might be something you should look into because we feel like you're going to be a good coach?
I think after, you know, there was a time where I was still in college. And then after my second year, you know, playing at college at Florida Memorial, my girlfriend at the time, who's my wife now of 18 years, we had our first daughter. So I had to kind of start, you know, young. So let go baseball, playing, and, you know, just started working in the private sector. And then after like a year or two, I was done with it. You know, I was working for DHL, managing their inbound, outbound cargo stuff down in Miami. And it just got to a point where I wanted to get back into the game. So kind of asked them for their advice. And, you know, they thought it'd be a great opportunity to get in, and everything worked out, you know. So, you know, I think going back to that time, they were very crucial, you know, in me getting into coaching as far as mentorship and, you know, asking them questions about it.
How was that conversation with your wife? I think we've all been through that early on in our path where you may not make a ton of money in the beginning, but how was that conversation with your wife?
In the beginning, it's funny because our daughter was about to be born, and I jumped into an opportunity coaching at a high school with one of my buddies, you know, was playing there at the time back in 2004, and there was no money. You know, I just told her, hey, this is just kind of a hobby. I want to see if I want to get into it. And sure enough, the second summer after, a really good friend of mine who was coaching at the time at Miami Springs Senior High School, Phil Weiser, you know, he approached me with another opportunity to head up the freshman team, you know, at Miami Springs High School down in Miami Springs, Florida. And he told me the pay was $600. And I remember going to my wife and telling her, hey, we can make extra money at $600 for, you know, this season. What do you think? She's like, yeah, we need the money. You know, so at that point, right, when you're 20, 21 years old, you've got a daughter and now a wife, you're trying to look for different avenues of income. But man, just fell in love with it, with the organizational process to it, just everything that comes with impacting, you know, young guys. And for me, it just even wasn't about the money, you know, it was just being out there and impacting guys, and, you know, being able to give back to our community as well down in Hialeah, Florida.
Well, and you're better off starting earlier because you don't know what you don't know in the beginning. If you're not making a ton of money anyway, like you don't know what you don't know. So you're better off starting earlier with not making any money.
100%, you know, and I think that was, you know, it was good because I think it did allow me to have my own full-time job that I was working, and the schedule was perfect. I mean, I remember working not only at DHL, but at Miami Children's Hospital in the psych unit, you know, while I was coaching at Coral Gables High School, and even having an opportunity to go back to my alma mater at Hialeah High School, where there's a rich tradition of baseball, being able to maneuver some of the jobs I was doing because I wasn't a teacher. So I was just a part-time coach. And for me at that point, it wasn't even about the money. You know, it was just about what can I do to get these, you know, young student athletes to have an opportunity to go play college, you know, just kind of set them up for life as well.
What do you attribute to Hialeah being so good?
Man, I the coaches that we had, again, you know, that Coach Bilski, you know, Hector Aguila and Coach Marti, man, those guys knew what it was to be a highly a T-bred, even though they, you know, besides Coach, you know, Aguila, you know, Coach Bilski didn't play at Hialeah or Coach Marti. He was over at Pace High School. So, you know, just being able to bring that community, man. And I remember playing when we were younger in Hialeah Core League and Hialeah Athletic Association, HAA. That was all we did. There wasn't travel ball. You know, we had a long season, a short season. And I think that they did a pretty good job of bringing us all together. And I think that's something that's lost right now. And this is no disrespect to travel ball at all, but we don't have, you know, the community. I mean, our rec league back in Hialeah was really competitive, just like it was all over South Florida. And we don't have that anymore. So I think attributed to the success is actually all of us being out there playing and not worrying about, you know, chasing summer rings or plaques or banners. It was just kind of working and nonstop working. And I think that's attributed to the success that the baseball program we had over at Hialeah and just bringing in close-knit community to play baseball. And that's kind of all we knew, you know, at that time, especially growing up.
When did you get that opportunity then to take over the program?
That was in the after the spring of 2009. You know, the head coach at that time was our pitching coach at Hialeah, Coach Marti. And, you know, I was coaching at Coral Gables Senior High School. And he just approached me with an opportunity like, hey, I think you'd be a great fit, you know, to come out here and, you know, head up the alma mater. And it was like no questions asked. Like, what do I got to do? Where do I sign? And I was able to have that opportunity with, you know, Coach Shane Fulton and Ozzie Herrera, who was a Hialeah High alumnus. And, you know, we did some great things there. And that's something that again, everywhere I go, at the end of the day, I represent our hometown, our community in Hialeah, Florida.
So then what prompted the switch then going from high school to college?
You know, like every young high school coach, right? You think that you can coach in the SEC, right? You think you know it all. But there was always an interest for me to be able to jump into the college sector. You know, that's, I think, every high school, you know, coaches, I guess, dream, at least that's what it was for me. This is something that I wanted to do. And, you know, I was at the right place at the right time. At that point, I was selling tickets for a buddy of mine for the Marlins, working in the front office, just kind of helping him, you know, grow his network in the city of Hialeah. And I was actually set to sell some tickets to, you know, a friend of ours who was a doctor. And that's where the whole correlation begins of me getting an opportunity at ASA where, you know, hey, this brand new school is opening up. There's definitely an opportunity for them to bring in a young coach who has ties within the local community. Would you be interested? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. You know, just another challenge is something to, you know, kind of head start their career. And I was very fortunate to land that, you know, opportunity at ASA College. And that's something that I'm not here without those experiences and those people that have paved the way for myself to get to this point.
For somebody that has to start a program from scratch, what would you tell them?
There's no substitute for hard work. You know, at the end of the day, you know, it was a small program branch out of New York, ASA College. And, you know, we brought in about 30, you know, brand new student athletes just to head up the program. You know, you're getting to a point where not anybody knows who you are. You know, so you have to make phone calls, you have to send emails, you have to be able to go out and recruit not only the players, but the parents and even some of the high school coaches. I was in a good position because of the 6-7 years that, you know, 10 years that I coached high school baseball with the contacts and the connections that I had where people knew what I was about as a person, you know, and it was tough. You know, you get told no more than you get told yes. But for me, for someone that's going to start a program, again, it's just that work ethic, the dedication, and just kind of trusting the process. And it's cliche, but you know, you're not going to win a College World Series in year one. We understand that. It's all a process. You have to put the name out there, and it's tough. But at the end of the day, you just got to grind it out and just kind of do what you need to do to put yourself in a position to impact, you know, the community and do what you need to do.
Seems like down in that area, you have to know people to be able to recruit down in that South Florida area, which helps you a lot because you're from that area.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that was the biggest thing, you know, for myself when I took on the opportunity at ASA that I knew it's something that we would be able to build because of the contacts and the connections that we have, you know, with all the local high school coaches. And you have to also find your niche as to what type of player you're going to be able to bring in, right? With no facilities, you know, in the smack middle of a shopping mall. It's not always the best player. It's a right fit, you know, for not only the college, but for the program. So, you know, a lot of hard-nosed kids down in South Florida, not that there's none all over the country, but that's all I knew at that point. And that's what we went after. And we went after guys also that were cut from other, you know, junior college programs or, you know, let go at the end of the fall. And that's where, you know, we kind of turned that program, you know, the next step to it, you know, and winning baseball games is great. But at the end of the day, just being able to spend time with all those guys and road warriors, no home games, you know, so you definitely need the right type of person to be able to fit that mold for, you know, for what we went through at ASA.
Do you feel like starting on the high school side helped you relate to those players a little bit more because it's a little bit closer to the high school age range?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that that experience too kind of falls into where I'm at today, where I'm able to still relate to, you know, the high school coaches and some of the junior coaches, junior college coaches, excuse me, because of the experience that I've been able to go through where, you know, coached high school for a while, coached JC for a little bit, and then now here at the Division I level, all those experience all tie in to each other. And I think being able to coach high school while, you know, getting that opportunity at ASA definitely, you know, allowed me to also deal with the kids and, you know, do what we needed to do at that program.
You were honored with the Black College Nines Coach of the Year Award this spring.
Yeah, you know, it's something that, you know, I wasn't really, you know, looking to see if I got it or not. It just so happened where a buddy of mine called me congratulating me and I had no idea what was going on. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's not, you know, my award alone. You know, that's attributed to the not only, the assistant coaches that I work alongside with. You know, they do a phenomenal job, you know, getting everything rolling for our program. The administrative support that we do have here at Bethune-Cookman, which, you know, it's been awesome. But also the work that the student athletes buying into our vision of what we're doing at our program. So, you know, that's just a team award, even though, you know, it says Johnny Hernandez on it. That's definitely a team award with everyone that surrounds, you know, we surround our program with.
Did you have to make any adjustments when you got to Bethune? Because I know everybody, you know, and that's why I asked, because you're on the high school side, JC side. I think everybody kind of has this Division I thing. And that's why I asked that question, just to see if there was any adjustments you felt like you needed to make.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying to you if I told you that there was no adjustments and I had everything figured out. Absolutely not. That was a whirlwind of a summer, you know, making the transition from junior college to now becoming a Division I head coach. But there is transition along with it, you know, now coming from the JC side of things to the Division I side, just the resources that you're able to have, you know, to assist you in the process. And I think the rules part of it also.
Compliance, you know, is, I think that's what I always tell people. I'm like, it's paperwork and compliance is the only difference.
Yeah. And that was where, you know, I'm coming from JUCO where school starts and we're getting ready to roll to have 15 games or 20 games in the fall season. So wait a second, we have 8-hour weeks and then we have team practice. So that was an adjustment on its own, but the transition that made it helpful for me was the two assistants that I had when I got on board, you know, Coach Keith Zuniga, who's currently the pitching coach at the University of Hawaii, and, you know, Coach Jose Carballo, who right now is, you know, director of recruiting over at Missouri. You know, those guys really assisted me in that transitional process. And I think that without them, then, you know, I probably would have, I don't know, gone somewhere else, you know, but, you know, they did everything they needed to do to kind of keep me in check and just kind of keep me in line. Like, hey, these are the rules. This is what we have to do. And, you know, just like for any regular freshman that's coming into college from high school, you know, it does speed up on you a little bit, you know, and that was just the speed of the game. And I had that transition from high school to junior college. And then now from junior college to the Division I level when I first started out. So, you know, it was an adjustment all in its own. And, you know, I think I got a good grip of it right now, 6 years under my belt, but there's always, you know, things that you want to learn and you are learning. And that's why I appreciate everything that you guys do in the ABCA.
What are your processes for hiring new hires then? As far as when you're going through, because I get a lot of people reaching out. So that's why I ask, it's when you're looking to hire somebody new, what's kind of your process to hire somebody?
You know, I've been able to do it quite, you know, some time here at Bethune, and we have the assistant coach turnover, but it's not because we're firing people. It's because they're doing such a great job. And for me as a head coach, I think that I should not be a roadblock for any assistant, because be lying to you if no assistant coach wants to be a head coach. Absolutely. And that's something that us at head coaches, not only are we developing, you know, the players and the student athletes, but I think that we do have a responsibility developing assistant coaches to become head coaches, because we were all assistant coaches at one point, and that's the goal. So I think that there's a lot to go into it just based on, you know, what the position calls for. But, you know, just guys that are loyal, you know, guys that have, you know, work ethic, guys that are dedicated to not only developing the program, but have the dedication to develop, you know, young student athletes and young men, and assist them with the skills of life. And, you know, it's all a relationship business at the end of the day. You know, if I get emails about, you know, job applications or people that wanting to apply for jobs, and I go into my contact Rolodex, you know, and just, hey, what can you tell me about the person side of, you know, the personable side of things? Like, he could be a great baseball coach, but if he doesn't know how to connect with, you know, the student athletes, then it's not going to be a fit for us.
What have been your impressions of the SWAC?
Really good conference. You know, I can tell you that I spent 1 year in the MEAC in 2019, and then, you know, COVID in 21, our university opted out of athletics. So we were thrown right into the SWAC the spring of 2022. I think that, you know, the head coaches and the assistant coaches that work alongside with them and with the student athletes that we do have, I mean, I think the SWAC is a really good conference. You know, alone this year, if you look at what, you know, Southern was able to, you know, do to LSU, they won that game. Obviously, Alabama State beat Auburn. And then we had a couple of midweek wins as well, highlighted by the win at the University of Miami. I think it's going to continue to grow. And I think that every head coach that's leading the teams in the SWAC, you know, they're positioning themselves to continue to get better each and every year. And I'm very proud of the efforts of all the coaches all around to be able to continue to push the needle a little bit further with, you know, with SWAC baseball as a whole.
It just seems like there's a lot of pride with the coaches in the SWAC for the conference.
Absolutely. You know, it's a situation where we're all friends, but, you know, when we see each other on a weekend series, everyone's trying to beat each other, and that's fine, you know, but for us, it's, you know, how can we, you know, come up with different ways to continue to push the conference forward on a national scale? Just, you know, last year, you know, here at our program, you know, we had a guy get drafted in Nolan Santos in the seventh round, and our closer signed as a free agent, and other schools had opportunities for players to get signed. And this year, you see the eighth round, Alabama State, you know, had a player get drafted. So I think we're heading in the right direction. There's a ton of pride, you know, for us in the SWAC conference to continue to push this thing a little bit forward and continue to kind of push the needle, so to speak.
Y'all play a really challenging non-conference midweek schedule. Is that, I mean, geographically, you're in a pretty good spot to get some really good schools, but do you do that by design as well?
Yeah. I mean, obviously being centrally located here in Florida, it gives us an opportunity to play the teams that we play. So we very rarely have to leave the state of Florida to play, right? I think administration would like that on a budget standpoint. But I think it is by design also. You know, if you look at where Bethune-Cookman traditionally has been when they've had the opportunity to win a conference championship, it's going to be three regional sites. It's going to be Miami, Florida, Florida State. So, you know, traditionally that's where it's been. And I can't foresee a situation where Bethune goes outside of the state of Florida, depending how the other big three do. So we have to put our players in that position possible as many times as we can. You know, and I think the schedule does a really good job of recruiting itself, believe it or not. You know, we went to LSU a couple of years ago for a weekend series, went to South Carolina. But I think if we are able to put our players in that position as many times as possible, that's going to help us get ready for a really tough SWAC conference, you know, baseball tournament. So it's by design, but it also helps, you know, geographically where we're at located as well. We're only, you know, a bus ride away, 2 or 3 hours the most from everybody else.
What did working for USA Baseball do for your career?
Man, it did a lot. You know, I can remember when I first got the call, you know, I was coaching high school and I started as a scorekeeper back in the championships in Jupiter and West Palm. And then just that progression from a scorekeeper to being on the task force, to working NTIS, then NTDP, and then now the last couple of years working with the national teams and this past 23 summer, you know, having an opportunity that they gave me with the USA Collegiate National Team, it definitely opened my eyes to, you know, a lot of great people, you know, that I've been able to come across, you know, but I definitely do think, you know, having that USA baseball uniform, you know, you wear it across your chest, it means a lot, you know, at whatever capacity. And that's how I took it. You know, when I was scorekeeping, when there was no iPads, it was, you had to write it down with a pencil. Took pride in that, you know, then that led to an opportunity on the task force. But, you know, what it means to my career, I mean, I don't think that I'm in this position without USA Baseball and the support that I've had with, you know, several of my colleagues that I've been able to come across still to this day that we still have friendships and relationships with.
Being on the high school side and then work with a task force, do you feel like that helped you with some evaluation of players and what it's supposed
Absolutely.
To be like?
100%.
I mean, Ohio, you know, has great players, had so many good drafts, so you're around it there, but you see more kids on a national basis there too with USA.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one of the things where, you know, the first, you know, couple of times where you're scouting, you don't want to say the wrong thing, right? You want to make sure you say the right thing, but you ask questions. You know, we have guys like Daryl Don and Butch Chafin and, you know, some of those guys that we were around. They let you ask questions and you're going to be okay. You know, nothing's wrong. And one thing that it did taught me too during that point is to be able to fight for your guy. You know, if this is the guy that you really think is good enough to represent the red, white, and blue, then go ahead and fight for your guy. And I kind of took that with me when I recruit. You know, it's like, if this is a guy that I think is going to, you know, help us out, then you know what, fight for your guy. It doesn't matter if it's a Power Five school or a JUCO or whatever, just throw your shot. You never know. And privy to a lot on the evaluation side of things. And again, accredited to the people that I've come across with USA Baseball to assist me in that process as well.
And you're working individually with guys too in skill sessions too. You can see who's coachable, who's not coachable. And that goes into that piece too for them, right?
100%, you know, and that's one of the big things for us is again, it's not about the best player. It's about the right fit. You know, it's about the character, the makeup. It's, you know, is this guy, yeah, it's very easy to be a good teammate when you're 4-for-4, but when you're 0-for-4 and the strike zone is yay big, you know, how are you going to react and stuff like that? So being able to be put in a setting with those guys really allows you to see what the personality is going to be and does it fit that mold? Because, you know, as you know, when the USA baseball team goes to, you know, international competition, it's the band of brothers against everybody else. You know, nobody wants USA baseball to do well. So you have to be able that you get the right fit for the program, but also the right mentality and the right makeup and character.
You've made really good career choices. Was that betting on yourself?
Absolutely. You know, I again, like for someone that did not play Division I baseball, for someone that did not play professional baseball, just the one thing, you know, the work ethic, the dedication, and just kind of betting on yourself, right? It's about having that chip on their shoulder and not losing that. You know, I did a talk at a high school convention here in Florida. I want to say it was last year or a year and a half ago. And my topic was, I am you, you know, so how I tied everything in is I represent the high school coaches. I represent the junior college coaches because I am you. I was in that position, you know, and everything I've done it to a situation where I want to be the best at it, you know, and nothing was going to stop me from getting to where I needed to get to. And, you know, again, without that mindset, that drive comes from the city of Hialeah. And the Cuban population that we do have, the tight-knit Latin community that we have down in South Florida, you know, my parents came from Cuba, you know, and they didn't have anything. And they would work 2 or 3 jobs just to, you know, do what they needed to do. And, you know, my grandmother taking care of us and just kind of seeing that really fueled me to be put in a situation like if they can do it, then, you know, why not myself with the sacrifices that, you know, my family has made for myself to get to this point. And this doesn't happen also without the support of my wife, you know, Oli, that we've been together for 18 years and our two children, you know, again, it takes a special, you know, person to be with a baseball coach. And my wife's definitely special.
How long did it take you to develop your coaching voice, your coaching style? Or has it always been the same or did it take you a little bit to develop it?
No, it took a little bit. You know, I think when, you know, as an assistant, you know, on the high school side of things, you start learning from different coaches that you've been around, even, you know, when I played high school. And then when I got to JUCO, it was kind of thrown into that. You know, I think that The only thing in my career, and I talk to this to my closest friends, is I wish I would have been an assistant at the college setting before jumping into the head coaching role at a junior college. Reason why I say that is because there's so many things that I think that I could have learned that I would have done differently. Right. And it was kind of more, you know, hey, you're doing this on the fly.
Trial by fire.
So, yeah, 100%, you know, so, looking up the resources, I mean, all the videos from ABCA clinics, conventions back then, just trying to take bits and pieces of everybody. And then I was one when I was younger. Well, if it works for them, it's going to work for us, you know, and it took me some time to realize like not everything is going to work for every single program because the players are different. The personalities are different. So take some stuff that you know are going to work within your program and with what your philosophies are. And me being a pitching guy, you know, I always thought we're going to be pitching and defense, you know, heavy. You know, don't worry about the offense, right? Can't slug your way to a championship. So I've come to understand that you do need some guys on the offensive side. But as far as like the coaching style, the communication piece, you know, philosophy, all that has definitely evolved within the last, you know, I want to say 10 to 13 years.
Are you still heavily involved with the pitching?
No. So again, I think as a head coach, right, we hire assistant coaches to do their jobs. You know, I don't believe in micromanaging. You know, Coach Sanchez does a phenomenal job with our pitching staff here, Bethune-Cookman, and he was here at Bethune when they went on a crazy run when they won 10, 11 conference championships in the MEAC, you know, in a row. So, you know, having a guy like that that I'm able to lean on as well, you know, with his expertise and, you know, his ability to develop the pitchers, I kind of let him do his thing, you know, and I can't say anything else. I mean, statistically speaking, the last 3 years, we've been at the top, if not the best pitching staff in our conference. So he's doing a really good job. And even before that, with Coach Keith Zuniga, who's at Hawaii, we just hit it off. And as a pitching guy, being a head coach, you tend to kind of overshadow or want to make sure that everything's going right. Excuse me. But those two guys have done a really good job on the pitching side.
That's the hardest job at the Division I level is pitching. That's the hardest job for the assistant is pitching.
100%. You know, we just finished up our fall calendar, you know, and everything.
Now they do
was
great. Like
I
tell people that I'm like, hey, you can have a really long career being a pitching coach at the Division I level, but you could have a really short career too.
100%. You know, and knock on wood again, like with Coach Zuniga and with Coach Sanchez, my 6 years here, I mean, they both have done a phenomenal job with not only taking care of the arms, developing the arms, and then putting together plans, you know, for our guys to do what they need to do. And, again, coming into it at first, I was, as a pitching guy, you're kind of wary of who you bring in. But, you know, we hit it off. And, you know, when I had the opportunity to hire Coach Sanchez, it was a no-brainer. You know, somebody with experience, somebody that had experience coaching in the SWAC, somebody that had experience developing arms and knowing what it takes to take the program to the next level. He's done wonders, you know, for our program the last 3 years that, you know, we've been working together.
Well, and that allows you to manage every player on the team then.
It really does. It frees up, you know, a lot of my time, you know, and Coach Cartaya, who we brought in from FIU, who he handles the, you know, the infielders and the hitting. And then Coach Allen, who we brought in this past spring, who handles our catchers, you know, they do a really good job of getting the stuff done, you know, which allows me to be able to manage, you know, everything. So, again, without them, you know, we don't have the success that our program has had the last couple of years, to be honest with you.
Have you made any adjustments with how you're handling players since you started?
Yeah. You know, at first, I mean, being on the younger side, right, you think it's cool and it's great, but there's also kind of that boundary, right? Hey, I'm head coach, you're the player, right? But I think that the relationship piece is huge. You know, I think as with every relationship, it falls on three things, and this is one of our three core values that we have with our program. It's communication, it's you know, trust, and it's transparency. And we tell kids on the recruiting side all the time that we have an open door policy. Like, it's not just about, right, the X's and O's, ground balls, BP fly balls. Like, we're going to want to know what's going on in your day-to-day life, you know, because again, these are 18 to 22 year old dudes, you know, probably leaving home for the first time. And the kids that we usually get are first generation, you know, students trying to acquire a college education. So instead of jumping the gun and, you know, seeing a kid kind of have a bad attitude with what's going on, you know, well, coach, you know, I had an argument with my girlfriend, or hey, coach, you know, this was going on back home with my family. So we have that communication piece with, you know, our student athletes. Then once you have communication, you can have, you know, you start building trust. You know, every one of our players has 150% of our trust. It's our job as coaches, you know, and mentors to be able to not only earn the trust of our student athletes, but to keep that trust. And then once you start building on communication trust, then you fall back on transparency. You know, not going to sugarcoat anything, but at the same time, you know, not put them in a situation where they feel embarrassed in front of their peers. So, you know, those three things have definitely evolved also within the way how I handle, you know, the student athletes that I've come in contact with.
You meet with them every week? You meet with your players individually?
We try to, yeah. You know, for us, they know that our door is always open, you know. So we have some of our student athletes, like our players, they know what time we get in the office, and they're just kind of hanging out in the parking lot waiting for us to get in, or, you know, they just pop in. So, you know, we meet with them as much as possible. We talk to them as much as possible, because at the end of the day, it's about setting them up for life. You know, these guys are all going to be, you know, husbands and, you know, fathers and, you know, the sole provider of their household. So we have to be able to allow them to get the skills to be able to win in the game of life. And one thing that I tell our players all the time, and we have an 11-year-old son, his name's Jake, you know, bring him by the ballpark. You know, he's been coming to the ballpark since we moved here, you know, 6 years ago. So he finds a way to latch himself to some of the players, and he'll hang out in the locker room and he'll be part of practice. But I think it's important for our players to see that, because then they see, you know, Johnny, the dad, as opposed to, you know, Coach Hernandez, the head coach. And not only the impact that these players are having with my son, but I see the impact too that he's having on them, you know, where if he doesn't show up one day, I mean, they get on him the next day he shows up. So at the end of the day, when they know, hey, I got to go pick up Jake at school, I'll be right back again, they need to see that dad aspect of what we do as well.
Yeah, I have former players, when I talk to them, they don't ask how I'm doing, they ask how my kids are doing.
100%. I get that too. Like, hey, how's Jake doing? I'm like, okay, all right, sounds good, man. Hey, what's going on? Hey, coach, how's Jake? All right. But no, it's great. Again, like, I think that, you know, we have a unique opportunity, right, that I didn't have. I didn't grow up, you know, in a college ballpark or anything like that. And just being able to provide that opportunity for my son is second to none.
You guys start school fairly quickly here. You know, where will you start? Will you meet with them for a while before you get on-field stuff going, or how soon will on-field stuff start for you once you get going?
Yeah, that's usually the plan, excuse me. You know, they'll get here August 9th, check in, do what they need to do on the administrative side of things with the university. And then we'll have our meetings probably the week after. What I've usually done in the past is I try and give our guys the first week of school, which starts August 19th, just to give them a whole week of just kind of going through school with no worry about baseball, practice, none of that. So we'll probably start individuals the week of August 26th. And then being in Florida, you know, the weather is conducive for us to kind of back up our team practice phase till, you know, maybe the first or second week of October. So it gives us, you know, a really good 5 to 6 weeks of player development and doing the individuals and skill work with the guys to, you know, be able to be ready for October, instead of, you know, having to deal with winter storms or, you know, any of the cold weather where we have to be in a bubble. I mean, again, we're fortunate enough to be here in Florida where, you know, the weather is good, and then we'll get some rain. But it definitely does help, you know, being at Jackie Robinson Ballpark, home of the Cincinnati Reds, a affiliate team, the Daytona Tortuga, where that's all, you know, the field is all turf. So again, like, we don't have to worry about banging a practice because of rain, you know, and we're fortunate again to have that relationship with the Cincinnati Reds and with the Daytona Tortugas, which allows us to be able to practice.
We play outside competition in the fall. Will you play somebody else?
Yeah. Yeah, we do. Last year we played Eastern Florida State College, and then we also played against the University of North Florida. This year we're going to play against Miami-Dade College on a Saturday in November, and then we're working on a scheduled opponent for the rest of the fall.
I always like to play in the junior colleges in the fall.
I think it's huge.
Especially for schools that recruit huge junior college players. Like, I think it's twofold. I think it gives you an opportunity to get out there and play, but it also gives you an opportunity to see junior college players play against Division I players.
100%. And that's the one thing that I've kind of done is try and schedule, you know, junior college opponent, because it does give us the ability to recruit. It allows the JUCO guys to see, you know, wow, this is where you play. The stadium is beautiful. Everything. Yeah. Like, just give it a shot. And then it lets us see and identify, you know, and evaluate the talent throughout, you know, whether it's 14 innings or 15 innings. And, you know, at that point, when our open recruiting period starts in September, you know, we're hitting up the JUCO events, you know, anyways. You know, we recruit a lot of the junior college, you know, baseball guys, and that's kind of something we've been doing the last couple of years. So, you know, it all ties in, but it definitely gives them an opportunity to check out our campus and, you know, do what they need to do.
Yeah, it seems like you have a good mix of junior college and high school players on the roster.
Yeah, you know, in 2021, when our administration decided to opt out of athletics for that season, you know, I went back to the drawing board. I remember that I went to my office. We had a bunch of high school names, you know, literally on the board, and I wiped it all clean. And I said, we're going to go JUCO heavy because we have to stabilize our program. And that's what that 22 season was all about. It was about stabilizing the program after 2 years of not playing. And being a junior college coach, you know, when I was at ASA, I believe in the JUCO process. Like, I think that at that point, we couldn't wait. As crazy as it sounds, like, we just couldn't put freshmen to play against, you know, 23, 24-year-old guys. I mean, that's just the landscape of college baseball, where it was back then and where it still is. So, you know, we made it a point to recruit heavy on the JC side. And that's what we did. You know, in 22, we did that. And the recruiting cycle of 23, we're going to continue to do that, especially with the type of schedule that we do play. You know, we're constantly going up against, you know, the best teams that Florida has to offer. And we have to be able to put ourselves in a situation to compete if we want to continue to evolve this program. So it's a good blend. Not necessarily would we hit the transfer portal, but it's really just JC guys that we go after.
And as much as some of the other schools are hitting the transfer portal, there's really good JC players sitting out there looking for schools.
100%. You know, and that's the one thing, you know, where, you know, everyone's recruiting philosophy is different. You know, if everyone's fighting for the transfer portal kid, I'd rather go take the JUCO guy that has 100, 150 at-bats under their belt, or, you know, 70, 80 innings under their belt that they're battle-tested also. You know, they're just playing junior college baseball. And then there's a lot of really good junior college baseball programs across the country, you know, that can definitely beat some Division I programs. That's just what it is. So, you know, we find ourselves the opportunities to not stay stuck in the state of Florida. You know, we go Georgia, we've gone out west before, we've gone to the Midwest, just wherever the best, you know, available player that's going to fit our system and what our needs are. And if they check the boxes, then we're going to go ahead and recruit those guys.
How actively involved are you with the recruiting process?
A lot. You know, again, it's a situation where, you know, we all work together, you know, with it. I don't handcuff our assistant coaches. If they see a player and everything checks off, they know kind of what, you know, we expect for them to be with our program and meeting the standard day in and day out. If everything checks off, then go after, you know, our guys. You know, that's what we call it. So we're all actively working together with it. When we have visits, obviously I'm here, and we all coordinate with each other. And, you know, but for me, I think that's something that I love to do. I enjoy the recruiting process, to be able to meet the players, meet the families, and, you know, be able to go up against some other schools to see if we get the commitment. Like, just that's that driving force that continues to propel the program moving forward, where we're not going to, you know, just tell ourselves, well, you know, there's a couple of schools on them, we're not going to, you know, even offer this guy. Absolutely not. Like, go out, let's shoot our shot, let's do what we need to do. Cause you never know, fight for your guy. You know, so actively in the recruiting process, but again, we all work together, you know, and I don't believe in handcuffing our assistant coaches. And, you know, if they like a player and they check the boxes, well then, you know, let's get after it.
How gratifying is it for you to be able to give minorities opportunities in an HBCU school?
Really good. You know, I think that's important, you know, for us. And that's something that we're changing too on the recruiting side of things, you know, to give minorities an opportunity to do what they need to do. You know, I know the participation level in the big leagues is not where it needs to be. But if you look at the draft the last couple of days, there's been a lot of minority kids have been drafted, you know. So, you know, the fact that the talent is there is just, you know, giving kids opportunities, you know. And I think that Major League Baseball with the, you know, the Breakthrough Series, Hank Aaron Invitational, some of the stuff that they're doing down there with MLB Develops, it's giving kids an opportunity. I think the other thing, too, is, you know, if the minority kids the better ball players, if they give HBCUs an opportunity also to recruit them, I think that that's going to change the game a little bit more, you know. So it's gratifying, especially me being a minority, you know, Hispanic background, you know, giving kids opportunities to be able to push this thing forward.
Do you have to do much fundraising?
Yes and no, you know, it just kind of depends.
Like for me, that Bethune's pretty well funded.
Yeah, we are, you know, and again, that's because of the administrative support, you know, that we do have, you know, without the support of our athletic director, Reggie Theus, you know, his support staff with, you know, George Bryant and Scott Summers and, you know, our president, without them, this doesn't work, you know. So we'll do some fundraising here and there, but, you know, in a really good position, you know, with our university, you know, to be able to ask for things within reason that we'll be able to, you know, to acquire to continue to evolve our baseball program here.
When you get into the season, then how do you know how to adjust practice planning, or do you, is it pretty set for you throughout the year as far as how practice goes, or do you adjust on the fly as needed?
I think it's a little bit of both, right? I think in the beginning, once the kids get back from, you know, winter break, you know, we go through that 8-hour window again, the individual side of things, just making sure, the biggest thing is making sure the arms are healthy and ready to go, you know. And then once we're able to have, you know, team practice, then, you know, it's, we know it's going to be Friday, Saturday, Sunday for the first 3 weeks before opening day, and then try and mix in a midweek scrimmage if possible. And then just as the season progresses, then we go on the fly based on what are some areas that we have to improve on? You know, what are some areas that we're really good at, and what are some areas that we need to work on? I think that, you know, this year we changed it up a little bit as far as like kind of how we handled our practices, and it worked well. You know, I think the results were there, and, you know, it's going to get better because now we bring back, you know, a plethora of our returners that are coming back. So that's always good. So I think in the beginning, it's pretty much standard of what we do. But as we get through this season, you know, we also have to take into account how much travel, you know, we're going to be doing, especially in the SWAC, you know, and just kind of easing off on the guys as opposed to just going, you know, metal, just gas pedal, gas pedal, gas pedal, where we have to be able to take a step back. And that's one of the things that, you know, I've learned through my career, where when I was younger, it was like, we're going to practice every day, 3-4 hours. This is what we're going to do. And then just being able to scale back and understand that, you know, rest, nutrition, you know, for those guys is much more important, right, than just hitting BP and, you know, just doing what you need to do. But I think that we go on the fly as the season, you know, kind of carries itself.
I think your conference season is challenging too, because you play everybody twice, because it's a double round robin.
Yeah. So yeah, you get, it's, you a get double round robin
one time, but then you know you're going to see him again. So it's who can make adjustments that second go around.
Yeah, and this is where, you know, we have so much pride in what we want to do to move the conference forward. So this is going to be the first year that we're getting away from the double round robin.
Love it.
You know, so we're going to play everybody, you know, one time through. And, you know, since we do have 12 teams, what we're going to do is rotating every year, you're going to miss somebody. So we'll have 30 conference games. And I think that that's something that is much needed to get away from the double, you know, round robin that you mentioned earlier, because, again, it's going to give us an opportunity to have a SWAC regular season champ. And then whoever the SWAC tournament champion would be, then so be it. But I think that what we're trying to do to push this program forward, or the conference forward, is to see how can we have an at-large bid outside of a conference tournament champion. And it's tough. It's not easy. But those are conversations that we're having as a coaching staff. And I think this is just one step in the right direction for our conference, you know, moving forward in that situation.
Yeah, because I've had multiple conversations with other people in other conferences, like, okay, if this is what the best conferences are doing, whether it's regular season or their tournament format, you should probably try to emulate that a little bit. I get it with ADs and presidents sometimes from a financial standpoint, but I think people get in their way from a conference standpoint of, okay, this is what the better ones are doing. You know, the SEC and the ACC went to more teams way before, and for conference tournament way before anybody else did, and it's helped them. I think it also helps save jobs too. Just from the outside looking in with athletic directors, I think it saves jobs if you can get more teams into conference tournaments.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, right now we have 8 teams going into the SWAC tournament, the conference tournament, but I think that there's going to be talks of us maybe expanding that. Now, what that looks like, it's still TBD. But I think if you look at the SEC model and what they do, if we decide to have all 12 teams, you know, get into the conference tournament, then, you know, maybe the bottom four have a one-day playoff or one-game playoff, and then you go double elimination format the rest of the way. So those are conversations that are being had right now. I don't think that's something that's going to take place this next year, but it's definitely some topic of conversation, especially with our SWAC commissioner, you know, wanting to have the ability of more teams expanded into the not only conference baseball tournament, but in basketball, they just expanded it as well. And I think it's going to go across the board. So
love it.
The one thing that we're all ecstatic about is the fact that we're going to be able to play everybody, you know, and you're exposing the student athletes to different pockets of the country, different universities, the rich tradition of some of these programs, and, you know, being able to have that historical significance as well. You know, it hasn't been done, and we're going to do it. And, you know, I think that, you know, I want to say we're all pumped up for it. I know I am, you know, in the SWAC conference, but that's again attributed to the work that the, you know, head coaches and the support from administration is key to make this happen.
Do you take time after the spring to evaluate the season at all before you get ready for the fall?
I think I take about like 2 weeks, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, you know, just because I have to give myself, you know, a breather as well. You know, I won't even watch the conference tournament, you know, for like 2 or 3 weeks just to see kind of what went wrong and what we got to fix and what we got to correct to get us to that point of, again, you know, having an opportunity to win a conference championship. But,
you guys were right there this year.
Yeah. You know, we lost to a really good Jackson State team. And that's the thing about the SWAC, especially with the format that we had. I mean, you had a number four seed that went to the championship, you know, game against Grambling University, who was a two seed. So not always the one seed is going to win it. But we're right there, you know, we're on the cusp of it. And, you know, I give myself, you know, about 2 or 3 weeks, you know, just to kind of, you know, get to a better place, so to speak, to be able to see, okay, evaluate the season and, you know, what went wrong here and maybe some things that we need to address in the fall to be able to, you know, not experience, I guess, some of the losses, right, that we had.
Do you guys run many summer camps?
We don't, you know, because we do share the facility with the Daytona Tortugas. You know, it has to fall in line with the minor league schedule as well. So if there's opportunities for us to do any camps, youth camps and stuff like that, we'll try and do it. But if it doesn't fall in line with the schedule, if the pro team's at home for a week or 2 weeks, and then we got to go out recruiting, then, I mean, that's going to take.
It's actually better, by the way. It's better than going after on camps in the summertime. Now, it hurts financially a little bit because it's a way to get some more money. But the summer camp grind along with the recruiting grind is a different deal.
Yeah, I mean, we've tried to experiment with, you know, trying to do youth camps, and, you know, the prospect camps will do well, you know, that we'll do one, you know, in the middle of the fall, and then we'll try and do one, you know, right before the high school season starts, you know, in like a winter camp. But, you know, at the end of the day, the summer camps, man, like if it doesn't fall in line with the schedule of the pro team, then, you know, unfortunately, we won't be able to do that. But that's something that we're trying to build up slowly but surely to be able to provide, you know, that opportunity also for the youth around Volusia County.
Do you have a fail forward moment? You have something you thought was going to sidetrack you, but looking back now, it helped you move forward? Could be professionally, could be personally.
I think the move to ASA, to be honest with you, because I didn't know what I was going to get myself into, you know, and when I first went on that visit and I saw that we were in between a Burlington Coat Factory and a Planet Fitness, I was like, oh man, is this really going to work out? Like, what are we doing here? It was a two-story building. I was like, there's no way that this is going to work out. And sure enough, you know, I had 5 really good years there. You know, Ken Wilcox was the athletic director there. You know, he extended an opportunity when nobody else was giving me an opportunity. So I'm forever indebted for him, you know, allowing me to be able to do what I needed to do. And it was a blank canvas, you know, and that's the one thing that I enjoyed. It was a blank canvas and I was able to make it out, you know, to be whatever it was. And throughout that span, just learning to the administrative side of baseball, you know, and that's what I enjoy doing, you know, from scholarships to academic review, right? As a JUCO coach, you're the financial aid, you're the academic advisor, you're, you know, the head coach, and you're the strength coach. You're every type of coach that you can think of. But that prepared me for the opportunity that I currently have, you know, here at Bethune. And again, without the people at ASA that we were surrounded with, you know, I don't think this opportunity happens as well.
Do you have any evening or morning routines you feel like help you? high stress job? Do you have anything you do every day that you feel like helps you?
None. You know, I just wake up, you know, take the kids to school. Right.
That's one. Yeah. Like drop the kids off is like, yeah. That's a big one.
Yeah, that's huge. And the thing too is just having like just a moment of silence, so to speak, you know, my wife's into, you know, meditating and, you know, all that stuff and putting yourself in a good position to, you know, be mentally focused for any challenge that comes your way. And, you know, we try and do that at night also, you know, it's just putting yourself in a situation to make sure that you're in the right headspace, to deal with anything. And what could be an issue for other people, being where I've been, it's like, oh, this is nothing. Like, we're going to solve this issue, you know? And I think that also experience at ASA where, you know, we didn't have, you know, really a facility, you know, we ended up practicing at the high school, at Hialeah High School, where I coached high school at. And, you know, I'm not worried about, okay, well, I don't have this big fancy facility. Well, hey, pitchers, you're going to have a bullpen and you're going to have a field to throw and you're going to have a mound to pitch on. And position guys, we have one batting cage and like, we're going to be okay. You know, I would push, you know, shopping carts as our ball cart, and that's fine. It's no big deal. So something that may be big to other people when it gets presented as, I guess,
it's
something wrong.
It really
is
about
perspective, you know, and that's where, again, I attribute the experience out of ASA, you know, to be able to handle some of the, you know, some of the things that we go through here, you know, at the university.
What are some other resources you dive into that you feel like help you? Books, podcasts, anything?
Yeah, I mean, books, I can tell you, I can't read a book. You know, for me, I'm more of an audio guy. You know, if I can punch in, you know, something on the podcast, whether it's the ABCA or I try and look for leadership podcast, just, or building, you know, team building exercises, just stuff that's not only going to help me, but it's going to be able to allow me to help our guys, you know, grow, you know, as men. So I don't want to be here and say I know it all, because I don't. So like any opportunity, you know, even reading like the Energy Bus, you know, those books, like just audio books, it's perfect for me. Everyone's, you know, learning style is different. But I enjoy the audio, the podcast.
Your auditory,
especially when. Yeah, especially when we're on the road for so much time that we are, you know, if you got a 4, 5, 6 hour, you know, car ride to get to an event, you just pop in a podcast, and, you know, I thoroughly enjoy those.
What are some leadership things or team things that you like doing? You mentioned early on about dealing with the new guys and with your three core covenants and not embarrassing, you know, teammates not embarrassing. Like, what are some things that you do with them that you like, that you feel like help them?
I think the biggest thing is allowing to like the older guys to be able to step into a role of leadership, you know, and we'll bring in, you know, several guys that have been with our program, you know, for a couple of years, and just let them know, hey, man, like, you're going to be the leader, right? It can't always be the coaching staff that's going to get on the guys, because, you know, culture is very hard to define, but it's very easy to see. You know, we say that all the time here, right? So, you know, what does it look like? And I actually took this from a podcast that I had, you know, Justin Hare speak, you know, about bringing in the guys and, you know, hey, in 10, 15, you know, years from now, and you're an alumni of this institution, you know, what does a championship team look like? You know, how are they dressed? You know, how are they getting on time? Like, what is their interaction with not only their coaches, their teammates, but also people around the campus and the community? And you just start getting guys to kind of fire in on that, right? And then, well, okay, if this is what you guys want, then this is our standard. Then how are we going to be able to, you know, acquire and meet the standard day in and day out? It can't always be the coaches, because we're not always going to be in the locker room. We're not always going to be with you guys. So what is it about this, you know, section that we're going to utilize to get to the standard that we're going to be able to get to? And that's helped. You know, we've had certain guys, you know, pull me, hey, coach, man, like, this dude was 5 minutes late and we send him home. Well, okay, you know, that's fine. That's great. You know, I'll support that, because at the end of the day, you know, we're trying to also be able to allow these guys to express themselves and be who they are, you know, without the worry of, am I doing something wrong? No, I went trial by fire, man. So like, you're going to be okay.
Who knows you to get an ABCA?
Man, years ago, you know, one of my high school coaches, you know, a buddy of mine was like, hey, you're going to go to this convention, and, you know, with the private sector, and it's very hard, right, to get time off. So the first convention that I went to, believe it or not, was actually 2 years ago, when it was in Nashville. And my assistant at the time, Jose Carballo, who's at the University of Missouri right now, was just, we're going, no questions asked. I went the year before and I was like, well, okay, I obviously got to let, you know, my wife know. So I planned it out where, you know, we had 2 weeks on the road for winter break and, you know, went to Nashville and just such an awesome experience. You know, I think being able to be in rooms, you know, with certain coaches and talk about certain topics, I think it's great. You know, I think the one thing that I learned is, again, like, you don't have to be caught up in making sure you go to every single talk. You know, that's maybe one piece of advice that I would give somebody. You know, that's one thing. Just kind of pick the topics that you want to go to, you know, and the people that you want to hear speak. And then just the friendships, the relationships, the different people that I knew that I had no idea went to the ABCA, where I see a high school coach or a former colleague and, you know, all that. So I try and go, you know, now every year, as long as the schedule allows it. But I got to make sure I take care of the family vacation first before I go to the ABCA. So, you know, I'm sure, you know,
I'm proud of you for that, though, the family vacation piece. Cause that's a big part of it. Cause obviously you're away from them for a lot of the year, and it's good that you're doing that.
Yeah, it's huge. You know, just this, about 2 weeks ago, for the 4th of July, we were on the recruiting dead period, and it just so happens that our wedding anniversary is July 3rd. So I know that every July 3rd, our wedding anniversary, we're going to be on a dead period. So, you know, kudos to my wife for picking that date, right? Years ago. But it's great. You know, we were at Anna Maria Island, you know, spent a week out there. And, you know, as much as you're on vacation, you're still working, you know, but you definitely, I have to still learn how to tone that back, you know, where I'm on vacation with the family and, you know, I got my kids in the beach and I'm taking phone calls with recruits or text messages, you know, and it's a situation where, you know, it's just tone it back. Like, hey, man, enjoy it. You know, so for the winter, we do road trips.
Let me know if you figure that out, because I can never figure that part out. If you figure that out, let me know.
It's tough.
I could not figure that part out.
Yeah, it's tough. And that's why it's better in the winter. You know, in the winter, we, you know, my wife doesn't fly. So we try and do road trips, and we've done road trips to from Florida to New York. And we try and stop at every state and just give the kids that experience as well. We've done Texas, Louisiana, New Orleans. We've done all that. And, you know, I enjoy it. You know, I don't mind the driving. I mean, I drive for work anyways when we have to go to the recruiting events. So, you know, just taking them out there and just taking the time to, you know, be able to spend, you know, quality time with the family is huge. Because, again, without the support of, you know, our wives and even, you know, the kids, our children, man, like, they understand we're not home. So, you know, it's definitely something for them, you know, to be with them for 2 weeks, you know, without a worry in the world about dad's leaving the day at 8 a.m. and he won't get back till 10 o'clock at night.
What are some final thoughts before I let you go?
No, I really do think, you know, I thank you for the opportunity, you know, to speak about our program. And like, if there's any newbies that do go to the ABCA convention, just understand you don't have to go to every single topic, right? Because then you get lost in everything. Just pick certain topics that, you know, you definitely want to address or want to get, you know, better at. And take what you can and how can you, you know, apply it to your program. And not everything is going to work, and that's fine. You know, you can go trial by error. You know, but it's not a moment for you to do it when you get back to school in January. You know, give it some time and then, you know, implement what you need to in the fall. And again, just appreciate everything that you guys all do. And I appreciate for you having me on, talk a little bit about our program here at Bethune-Cookman in Daytona Beach.
Thanks for your time, Johnny. Have a great fall.
You got it, my man. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Always great to connect with people in the baseball industry that you haven't met. Another reminder of the great people we have in the baseball community. Best of luck to Coach Hernandez as he tries to continue the rich tradition at Bethune. Thanks again to Jim Richardson, John Litchfield, Zach Hale, Matt West, and Antonio Walker in the ABCA office for all their help on the podcast. Feel free to reach out to me via email, rbrownlee@abca.org, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at @CoachB_ABCA, or direct message me via the My ABCA app. This is Ryan Brownlee signing off for the American Baseball Coaches Association. Thanks, and leave it better for those behind you.